Hi, my name is Luis Pina, and today I'm here to talk about the DSL approach to reconcile equivalent divergent program executions. And this is joint work with Daniel, Anastasis, and Christian. All my co-authors are here, so feel free to talk to us about this topic. Okay, so given my title, you must be wondering, what the hell are equivalent divergent program executions, and why should I care? So let me start with a very small example. So here we have two programs, Hello1 and Hello2, which, when run, do the same thing. They just print Hello World. You would consider them to be equivalent as they do the same thing. However, upon closer inspection, you would see that Hello2 uses a specialized memory allocator called GEmalloc, while Hello1 uses the regular standard memory allocator. This is fine. The execution is equivalent because both programs are correct in terms of memory usage. And any program written in C that is correct behaves the same, regardless of the memory allocator that it uses. So this is good. But looking a bit closer, using strace, which basically gives you the sequence of system calls that the process issues, you realize that Hello1 uses a single system call to write its output, while Hello2 uses two system calls to write its output. Again, we can consider these two executions to be equivalent, even though they diverge in the sequence of system calls that they issue. So we care about this because we can run both of these programs in a multi-version execution setting. And the idea here is that we can run both programs as one and compare their execution as they go. You might want to do that to improve reliability. So for instance, imagine that there's a weird number that causes the regular malloc to fail. If you run both these versions, you can tolerate this problem by keeping to execute the one that doesn't fail. Or you can use multi-version execution to improve security. So you can use all the versions that you're running as oracles to cross-check each other. And here, clearly, Hello2 is misbehaving as it is forking and giving someone shell access to our machine. So to maximize the utility of multi-version execution, the versions should be as diverse as possible while still being equivalent. However, let's hold on to that idea of versions being diverse but equivalent. What happens when we have equivalent executions that diverge on the sequence of system calls, like the two examples that I showed here? So state-of-the-art multi-version execution systems struggle a lot with the simplest divergence that you might think. So for this divergence that I'm showing here, they really struggle. So today I'm here to talk about domain-specific language to capture these divergences and tolerate them. And in fact, you are already looking at almost an example of my DSL. If I remove all the text from this slide and I just add an arrow there and a comma there, basically this is the rule in my DSL that tolerates this divergence. Okay, so now I'm going to describe a little bit of multiversion execution so that I can tell you how the DSL works and how it can be embedded on any multiversion execution system. So I'm going to use Verin, which is the multiversion execution system that we implemented our prototype on. And on this example, we have two versions, one called the leader and another called the follower. And the user interacts directly with the leader, but the user doesn't know that there is an MVE deployment going on. So what happens is that Verin captures the system calls that all the versions issue. And when the leader issues a system call directly on the kernel, Verin intercepts that system call and registers it on shared memory. It registers its number and its arguments. Later, when the kernel returns any results back to the leader process, again, Verin intercepts it and registers the results on shared memory. So basically this way, when the follower, which is executing the same program, would try to issue the same system call, Verin intercepts it, and instead of issuing directly to the kernel, it issues the system call to basically get, it compares the system call with what is on shared memory that the leader did. And if it matches, then it basically gets the results from the leader. And this way we are executing both programs over the same sequence of system calls. They execute as one. There's not a single system call in shared memory. As you might imagine, we keep a buffer of system calls for performance reasons. And this is the basic architecture. Our DSL will execute on the follower, and it will have access to the sequence of system calls that the leader has put on shared memory and the sequence of system calls that the follower issues. And borrowing terminology from the record replay people that have just presented two talks before me, I'm going to call the sequence of system calls that the leader issues the recorded sequence, and the sequence of system calls that the follower issues the replayed sequence. And this is a weird way to visualize what's going on. So it's better to visualize it like this. So we have two sequences of system calls, and our DSL basically in the middle reconciles between both. And in this case, the DSL gets the next system call on both sequences and provides the MVE system with an action about what to do next. And in this case, the action is match, which simply means do exactly what I've described before. Get the results from the recorded side and put them on the replayed side. Okay, and then we advance both sequences by one position, and we keep doing that at every single pair. So I've shown the default rule, which I list there. So all system calls have a default rule on an empty file, and that default rule simply names the system call read SR and maps it to itself on the right-hand side. Besides the action match that I showed, there are other actions, NOP, skip, execute, and store, and I'm going to show those to you on three further examples, the hello world, nothing keyword, and C predicates that I'm going to show now. So before, we've seen this example of the DSL, which basically matches the one hello world to the one write to two writes. And this is how they would appear in these two recorded and replayed sequences. And what the DSL issues on this case is it issues the NOP action for the recorded sequence and the exec action for the replayed sequence. And on the NOP means do not advance this sequence, the recorded sequence, just keep the system call and pass it to the next version. And the exec action means execute this system call directly on the kernel. Do not try to match it with the recorded because it doesn't make any sense. So we do that, we issue that one directly, then we call the DSL again once more to see how to reconcile the current system call on the recorded side with the one on the replayed side, and now we get skip and exec. Exec, I've already showed what it means, and skip means just advance the recorded sequence one position. Do not try to match this recorded entry, this recorded system call with the replayed side, just advance it, just drop it. Okay, and we've reconciled this divergence. Sometimes another divergence that happens very, very frequently is that on the replayed side, we have extra system calls that are not really connected to anything that happens on the recorded side. They just happen spuriously. Like you can imagine a random scheduler ill being injected here and there. So for these types of system calls, we have a keyword, nothing, that simply means whatever happens on the right-hand side might happen at any time. And this way, we can tolerate sequences that happen spuriously without being anchored to anything on the recorded side. Of course, nothing can also happen on the right-hand side of the rule, but I'm going to show you only this example. And the way the DSL tolerates this is simply by issuing actions NOP and exec, which we've seen before. And now we've tolerated this divergence, and again, we can advance the ring buffer, the recorded side one position more. So my final example is another common case that we found that basically sometimes the order of system calls get reversed. So here on the recorded side, we are installing two signal handlers by one order, one, two, and on the replayed side, we are installing the same signal handlers but by a different order, two, one. And the rule for tolerating this divergence is a little bit more sophisticated. So what we have here is that we are naming the arguments of the system call SIGACT. We are naming them SIG. And then between brackets there, we have C code that gives us a predicate. The C code evaluates to true or false. And when it evaluates to true, it means that this rule matched. When it evaluates to false, it means that it doesn't. And that dollar Notation simply allows the C code to access the runtime value that is passed to this system call, SIGACT. And then, of course, this is regular C code, so it can access global variables that are in the same unit of compilation. And then simply we map the first system call and the second system call to the opposite order on the right-hand side of the arrow. And now the way it works, I need to introduce the last action that I'm missing, which is store. Store means advance the sequence one position, but keep the system call because we will refer back to it. And as you can imagine by looking at the rule, basically we are going to thread the recorded side through the rule, basically loading all the system calls that happen on the left-hand side one by one. We are going to attribute an index to them so we can refer back to them. And then once the rule has been fully matched on the left-hand side, we start matching it on the right-hand side. And now here we have the match action again, but now on the left, on the recorded side, we have an index. So basically match the first system call on the replayed side with the second one on the recorded, and then the second one on the replayed side with the first one on the recorded. And this is how we match these types of divergences. We've deployed our approach in three different scenarios to validate its applicability on different configurations, different releases, and different dynamic analysis. So for different configurations, we used Redis. And the idea is that on the recorded version, we use Redis with the minimal configuration, no logs, no persistency. Redis is a key value store that uses memory storage and can be configured to use persistency optionally. And then on the replayed versions, in one deployment we use persistency, on another deployment we use very verbose debug logs, and on a third deployment we use both persistency and verbose logs. You might want to do this because you want to minimize the features of Redis that you are exposing for security purposes. So for instance, if there's a bug that is exploitable in the persistency layer, you can detect this, or if the persistency layer causes Redis to crash, again, you can tolerate that crash. So this is an interesting scenario and it needs very little rules. We also tried different releases, and the motivation here is that when a new release comes up, you might not trust it completely to work without crashing on your deployment, so you might want to run it in parallel with the previous version that you know that it works. And if the new version crashes, then that's fine, you're running in multi-version execution, you just keep providing service with the old version. So we tried these six pairs of versions, and we needed six rules common to all of them just to split the logs from the recorded side and the replayed side. We just split them to different files and we have these rules to tolerate that. And then we only needed one rule for pair three and four, three rules for pair five, and two rules for pair six. What's interesting here is that we have a protocol change in pair 3 from version 1.3.12 to 2.0.0, and we were able to tolerate that with a single rule. That's quite impressive. And we have a lot of changes on pair 5, and we only needed three rules to tolerate that. So those are really good results. And finally, we also tried different dynamic analysis. So the idea is that the recorded side always executes the native version, and then on the replayed side, we deploy different dynamic analysis. So we deployed the address sanitizer, memory sanitizer, and thread sanitizer that ships with Clang. And we also deployed Volgrind. And we needed a small number of rules. For Volgrind, there's some synthetic sugar that I'm not showing here. So those 14 rules would expand to a larger number of rules. And then we tried this on different applications. Git, OpenSSH, client and key generator, HTOP and VI. And basically we did the Cartesian product of all of these deployments with all of these applications. And these rules that I'm showing here, this number of rules, were enough to do this. On the mind of my audience, there might be this question. Finding these rules must be very, very hard. You have to look at how all the dynamic analyses are implemented. You have to know how Git works, how Redis works. Well, you're giving us more credit than we deserve. We are lazier than that. It's very easy to find these rules. So for instance, let me take the Volgrind example, which clearly is the most difficult. There are three steps to finding all the rules that we need. So first, run the native version of the same program with the same workload under strace and collect the log. Second, do the same under Volgren and collect the log. Third, simply compare the logs of system calls. And you'd be amazed that a simple tool like VimDiff or VisualDiff already provides you an output that is as detailed as this. So all the system calls that matched are already aligned for you. So actually, if we delete the system calls that match to themselves, the rule that we have to write for read is already there. Read is handled very regularly, always with the same pattern. And if we ignore some arguments and add a bunch of commas and tell on the right-hand side where the read system call happens, it would look like this. And this is exactly the rule that we need for read, which is quite a sophisticated rule. So it's very easy to find. It's so easy to find that we came up with a rule synthesis algorithm. It's very, very simple. The details are in the paper, but it basically does what I just described. It aligns system calls and then checks if the pattern repeats all over the log files. And it generates automatically a set of candidate rules. And we were able to find, out of 19 applicable rules, 16 of them, which is really good. Of course, non-determinism and infrequent system calls between separate runs hurt us, but it's already very good results. Again, the details are in the paper. So to conclude, I've shown you a technique to increase the applicability of multi-version execution, which is very useful for reliability and security. And the state of the art of MVE really struggles a lot with the simplest divergences. And we do that with a very simple and expressive language for reconciling system call divergences. The rules that are needed are very easy to identify, so easy that we provide you with a simple synthesis algorithm that already recognizes most of the rules that you'll need. Just a side note, we're hiring, so if you're looking for a postdoc and you would like to visit beautiful London, please talk to me or Christian, and we'll be very happy to tell you all about this project. I can take your questions now.
Hi, Meng from Georgia Tech. Great work. So a question from me is that for your rule collecting process, do you need some like sample or like profiling data, like so like test workload, or you can just use any kind of workload and it will just apply on all the production things?
You can use any workload. The idea is that you must be able to reproduce the same workload on the native version and then the version that introduces the divergences, so you can look at the divergences happening.
Okay, so in case that so if the workload I use is kind of different from the production workload, yep. So how your system responds to this?
Yeah, so you won't be able to using the synthesis algorithm, it will mm-hmm. fail, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if you look at them as a human, again, VisualDiff will tell you a lot. You'd be amazed at all the information that you get. And you'll be able to find the rules that you want.
I see. So a second question is like how this interact with like the multi-threaded applications. I see the examples you are showing is most of them are like single-threaded ones. So how will this change like if we have like multi-threaded applications?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I understood your question.
Okay, so the examples, the evaluations you show us is more on the single-threaded applications.
Threading.
Yeah, threading, yes.
Yeah, so it depends on what your multi-version execution system does with threading. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that you will have a different DSL instance happening for each mm-hmm. different thread. So basically, you're only worried about reconciling divergences within one thread, not among all the threads.
So basically, it's like agnostic, like it's a different, totally different problem in the DSL design. So it's like it's leaving this to the, like how this inversion system is handling multi-threading.
Sorry?
So basically, the answer is like totally leaving this to the how the inversion system is handling the multi-threading.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, thank you.
Anandjai from Yale University. I'm very interested in the synthesis part of your work. So my understanding to the synthesis is I give you the spike, the specification, and you have synthesizer. Synthesizer automatically generates the code according to the specification as input. So in your work, so if my understanding is correct, the synthesizer's output should be the rules you want, and the input is the trace.
Yeah.
So So, my question is, why a trace could be looked as the spec, or you have any, uniform format for the trace to translate them into some specification for a synthesizer, or I kind of missed the details for, of your synthesizer. Can you, detail some of them?
Yeah, the synthesizer just takes the sequence of system calls, the S trace, and basically counts the number, the frequency of system calls, and starts from most frequent to less frequent, and tries to see how they map between both traces. Comes up with a pattern and tries to match that pattern all over the trace. And by the end, if it's able to do that, you've found a rule.
So synthesizer algorithm in your work should be kind of like a space searching tree, and the leaves of the tree should be the solution, which is the rules in your work. And you actually cut off some branches during your search because some branches violate your constraint. Is that correct?
The synthesizer is much simpler than you are
okay,
thinking.
Anyway,
maybe we can take this offline.
We can talk offline because I'm very interested in the synthesis part of your work. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Daniel from the University of Toronto. I'm just curious if there's any sort of system calls where you know that this sort of approach breaks down. Like, are there any system calls where different invocations are very hard to map to each other?
That's an interesting question. Maybe we didn't find any.
Okay.
And the fact that you have the ability to run any C code that you want in those predicates means that you can add custom logic to try to
do
very
sophisticated. So you could do some sort of emulation or something if you really needed to. Okay.
Yeah. Our design was driven by example. We just kept pushing with more and more complex applications, and this is the best solution that we came up with. But
This seems pretty cool.
Yeah. Thanks.